All right, welcome everybody. This is week number one of the Smartass Success Teleseminar Series, and I am here today with Scott Ginsburg, who is the name tag guy, in that he wears a name tag and has worn a name tag 24/7 for, I don't know, over 10 years now. And Scott is here. We're going to talk about step one in this process, which is figuring out what you really want, which really comes down to unleashing your creative genius. So first of all, Scott, welcome to the teleseminar.
From one smartass to another, I'm excited to be here.
So am I, tell you. You know, let's get this right out of the way for people who may, for some ridiculous reason, drop off early. Let's get to the propaganda first, because that's what we want to do. Is Scott, if people are burning on the call or later on to find out more about you, where should they go?
Go to Google and type in the word name tag.
Really? So you're coming up number one on name tag, eh?
Yeah, I have for a long time. And I say that just because people like to communicate in a lot of different ways, and I want to be accessible in whatever form they choose. So if you do that, you can reach me however you want.
Brent, I think that's going to come back to some of the stuff we're going to talk about later. Is just you put out so much content that you're – you know, Google finds your stuff, which is why you can say name tag. So,
yeah, the power of volume. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you, boy. When we get to that, that's people are gonna be blown away by the power of your volume.
that's what she said.
Yeah, very nice. And we've set the tone right off the bat.
That's right.
So cool. Well, you know, I'm gonna get to a little bit about you, but first, let's just share what this program is gonna be about, which. Since you're the expert, I'm going to kind of frame it. Tell me if this sounds true. Is when I asked Scott to do this, you told me you had a module on vomiting. And so really, frankly, welcome everyone. Today we're going to talk about vomiting, but not in the gag reflex sense, but rather in how you can just produce, as we said, a ton of content, essentially just letting information flow from inside of you. Does that sound about right, Scott?
Pretty accurately. It's less messy, so I think you'll like it.
Good, good. And just to frame it for everyone here, we're going to talk about how this all relates, the importance of creativity, how it relates to figuring out what you want. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how do you initially tap into your creativity, how do you then improve your ability to tap into your creativity, and then talk a little bit about how we apply that so people can have a roadmap of where we're going with this.
Cool.
Now, Scott, to get started, you know, before we get to you and your background and stuff, you know, I've been on a lot of these types of calls and seminars, and I feel like sometimes you get on in the first 20 minutes, the expert goes on and on about how they got there, which is nice. But, you know, I want to start first with just some straight content, and then we'll get into how that ties into your background. So,
yeah.
You know, as we talked about before and as I said here, this whole seven-part teleseminar series is about really helping people figure out what they want and then get a plan and apply that plan to get it. And for me, figuring out what you want really comes back to creativity, which may surprise people. You know, what does creativity have to do with that? You know, shouldn't I just, you know, take an assessment test and be done with it? So I want to throw it to you is, you know, when it comes to really figuring out what is important to you and what you want to do with your life, why is creativity important?
Creativity isn't important. It's essential. Creativity is the highest form of human intelligence. Creativity is the foundation of everything that is good that has ever come out of our species. And I think the word actually means, like, to make something out of nothing. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But that's the definition of it. But the thing is, like, creativity is not a word. It's a way. It's an approach. It's how you do everything. Everything you do from – how do you change lanes without killing somebody and being safe? From how do you market your business? From how do you be a parent to your kids? The creativity is everything, everything, everything. It's my religion.
Wow. Well, that is a pretty broad and bold statement. So I'm going to, as we go through this, I'm going to really kind of question you and drill you down on that because I don't disagree with you, but I really want everyone on the call to get that. You know, that sense as to why that's important.
Okay.
And so, you know, one thing that is important and essential that I want to ask you about is, you know, what the relationship is between creativity and excitement. And what I mean by that is, one thing that strikes me both in talking to you and reading your blog is you seem like a person who genuinely wakes up excited and, you know, loves what you do. And, you know, I love what I do too, but, you know, you seem to take it to a whole other level. And I know one of the reasons people would be listening to a call like this is they want to find that thing for themselves that they wake up excited about. So,
right.
Just if you could speak briefly on, you know, A, am I right in that assessment of you? And B, you know, where does creativity fit into that?
Yeah, I think you're pretty right. I, about 95% of the time I wake up, I can't wait. I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's go. I'm like totally pumped. But I'm also a human being. I have my days where I'm like, wow, I am totally not motivated. I do not care. I do not want to get out of bed. And, you know, it happens. Part of life. But yeah, so for the most part, I'm ready, man. I start work 4 or 5 in the morning. I can't wait to get up. And, it has to do certainly with creativity, but it has to do with knowing who you are. That's pretty much what I talk about. That's what I teach people. That's what I know how. I mean, I'm all about self-reflection. I'm all about identity. I'm good at knowing who I am. I'm good at knowing who I'm not, and I'm good at knowing what I do and why I do it. And I'm also good at helping people figure out the same. So, gosh, I mean, there's a million different exercises that I can give people. There are different sort of approaches to it. Here's the best one. Here's the one that changed me forever. It was a total accident. My mentor was giving a presentation. He's a Black Baptist preacher who marched in the civil rights movement. So we're very much an odd couple. And he's been like the greatest influence in my creative life. And I saw him give a presentation to a bunch of students. And he talked about, in his presentation, about identity and about, you know, the concept of diversity is about respecting people's right to be and also honoring that same right in yourself. So we can't practice diversity until we know who we are, what makes us unique. And during this presentation, I had this idea. I was like, gosh, you know, what would be really cool? I would like to spend some time just answering the very simple but difficult question, who am I? Huge question, like maybe the hugest. And I thought, that it's so hard to answer that in one answer, or two answers, or 10 answers. So I said, all right, I'm going to make a list of 101 answers to the question, who am I, 101 answers. And it was so difficult. It was so fun. It was so exciting. It was so confrontational and revelatory that, you know, the first 20 were easy. The second 30 or 40 got harder. But that last, you know, 80, 90, 100, those were like bloody and real and honest and true. And so I'm doing this exercise. I was like, wow, I've already changed just by doing it. And it's not like I didn't know who I was, but I had that reflected back to me 100 times. And you really get to the core of your truth as a person. So I thought, all right, well, what's the next big question? What do I do? Same thing, 101 answers. And again, it was like, wow. So, you know, like my first answer on what do I do is like, I write books, okay? But then like the last answer was, what do I do? I function as an alarm clock for people.
Oh.
And I was like, damn, that's good. And you could only do that if you do it 101 times. So I was like, okay, fantastic. And now I get to the third one, maybe the biggest one, which is like the first two lists together, is why do I do it? Who am I? What do? Why do I do it? And I did 101 of those. And that was hard. That took another week itself just to do that list. So now I have 303 answers. Who am I? What do? Why do I do it? And, I mean, forget about just the self-revelation. Forget about how cool and challenging it was. But I've just written my marketing copy for the rest of my life. So all the stuff on there, I was like, oh, that's what I do. Well, is that on my website? No. Idiot, put it on there because that people will buy that. That's good. So that's an exercise that I would say about half the people will never in their lives do ever, ever. Because it's too confrontational, it's too much work, and people are afraid of what they're going to learn about themselves. And that's okay.
Well, I think you're being generous when you say half. I mean, I think it's a much higher percentage that won't do it.
Yeah. And you're probably right. And sometimes it's hard for me to remember that most people are not like me. I am a freak of nature. So I know most people won't do this, but I triple dog dare people. If you do this, I promise you, you will never question who you are again. Ever. And that's what gets you out of bed in the morning.
All right, well, let me ask you a couple of questions because I think this is a really powerful exercise you've given us. Question number one, you said the answering the third one took you over a week. So you, you know, sometimes these exercises we're told to sit, you know, don't get out of the chair till you've got 101, but you actually broke it up and spread it out.
I didn't mean to. I mean, I'm sure it'd be cool to sit down and do it, but I think it's important to stew on it, maybe, you know, spend a night or two sleeping and sort of thinking about it. Because, you know, once your radar is up, you might, oh, right, I forgot about that one and that one and that one. So, yeah, don't try to cram it in one. Like when I do strategic planning for organizations, we do it in a couple of hours, but that's because there's 10 people and it's a challenge and it's part of it. When it's just you, yeah, take your time. I mean, if it took me maybe 2 weeks to do the whole three lists, I mean, it's going to take people that minimum. So, you know, take your time. Don't put it into a box, but don't put it off. You know, tell yourself, you know, maybe do it with your spouse or a friend or a partner. I mean, I did it with my girlfriend, and then we shared it with each other. And that was, wow, talk about a relationship booster. Talk about intimacy. Share it with your partner. You really get to know who the other person is. It's beautiful.
Got it. And so with these 101 answer exercise, I'm assuming this is one of those no filtering things. So, for example, if I was doing it as a who am I? I mean, I might say I'm a speaker, I'm an improv comedian, I'm a blogger.
Right.
But then I could even go personal, right? I'm a boyfriend. I'm a I'm a martial artist.
Yeah, I mean,
a fighter.
Sure. There's no rules. No, there's no rules. You can write people. When I do this exercise, like, well, should I put this or that? I'm like, dude, there's no rules. The only rule is 101 for each question. Go, and that's it. And it's fascinating when you see people's lists because it reflects a lot about how you perceive yourself and how you define yourself and the labels that we put on ourselves and what we do. I certainly did it perhaps more from a business perspective, at least more the second two lists. It doesn't have to be. You know, I'm 31. I'm in full-on career mode, you know, so I'm highly wrapping my identity in what I do professionally. So it may not be that. If you have, if you're more of a family person and you're focused on raising your kids and being a spouse or a husband, cool. Then it may reflect that, but yeah, there's no limits, man.
Well, I guess the key is, like you're saying, it's what's important to you is going to come out if you keep at it.
Sure.
And then you kind of figure it out. So, you know, it's funny, right? The whole purpose of this call is to tap the creativity so we can figure out what we want. You know, in some ways I'm almost tempted just to end the call now, right? Because, I mean, do you honestly believe, as it sounds, if we go through these three questions, 101 answers for each, that by the end of it, you should have a pretty good idea of kind of what's going on inside of you as to what you really want to be doing with yourself?
Yeah, and it's almost like that Marcel Proust questionnaire. It's the kind of thing that maybe every 5 years we should redo. I mean, I did mine maybe a year and a half ago, I think, or maybe a year ago, I'm not sure, but I mean, I have it in my wallet. I shrunk down all three of the lists. It's a very small print, and I have it in my wallet. And, you know, it's a nice thing to just kind of take out if you need to, or if I'm telling someone, I'll share my list. And I'm happy to share it with people. I got nothing to hide. But what's interesting is that I look at it, I'm like, oh, wow, I totally don't care about that anymore, or that used to be important to me. Now I'm kind of over it. So I think it changes, and I think we should assess that change over the years.
Okay, well, that's wow, that is super. So, you know, one thing you had said before is, you know, you're I forgot the exact word you are, but you're like a very different person, like you're insane or, you know.
Something like that.
So let's take a second now to figure out, you know, just get kind of people like an overview. Just giving us a great idea, but now, you know, let's do the credibility section here just so people get a sense of who you are. So first off, why don't you tell everyone briefly about, you know, the name tag thing, what that's all about, and kind of how
sure.
You molded that into a career.
I appreciate the fact that she led with value and got to the ego stuff later. I think that's important.
Cool. Thank
so thank you for doing that. No one's ever done that, and I appreciate it. But more about me. So
yeah,
4,000 days ago, I decided to start wearing a name tag just for fun, just as an experiment. And that's usually what I tell most people, but the sort of deeper backstory is I started wearing a name tag because I didn't fit in. I didn't belong. I didn't have any friends in college. So I said, screw it. I'm putting on a name tag. Now I belong everywhere. So I did. And everybody was friendly. Everybody was nice. Everybody was sort of responding positively. And all I did was put this little sticker on, and I was like, wow, unbelievable. And so it turns out it wasn't a name tag, it was a permission slip. It gave people permission to say hi. It gave me permission to be friendlier. So when I was 20, and this is 11 years ago, 4,000 days ago, I said, all right, that's it. I'm going to wear a name tag every day forever. Now, I had no intention of starting a company, writing books, and building a publishing and consulting enterprise as a result. That just happened, and that evolved over time, and I listened to the clues of what seemed to work. You know, I wrote my book senior year, and then, you know, that was 12 books ago. So once I wrote the first book, apparently if you've written a book, people think you're smart. So I was like, okay, that's awesome. I guess I'll just write a lot of them. And the books led to speaking and consulting and strategic planning and everything. So it all stemmed from that one thing, that one simple idea. And that's sort of the big lesson is, you know, you're talking about creativity, which is about having ideas. Well, the thing is that you don't need an idea. You need an I did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the execution. That's what holds it all together. And that's it, man. That's my story. I'm a guy who wears a name tag.
Right. That's awesome. We're going to get to – I'm going to ask you more about execution in a bit here. You know, there's one interesting – I don't know if it was a shift or you always were this way, but you – I know I've been there in conversations where you basically introduce yourself not as a speaker or consultant but as a writer. And
right.
You've got a very disciplined writing lifestyle. So when – you know, could you let people know what your kind of writing lifestyle is and you know, when did you make that shift where that really became an important part of who you are?
January 1st, 2004. I'd been in business now for a couple years. Started writing my first book senior year, and I kind of wrote like 15, 20 minutes a day. Like, I've been a writer my whole life, so that was easy. And I just started writing, but I had no schedule. Published the first book, kind of wrote here and there, you know, did stuff. But I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a journalist about writing and getting into a schedule, and I kind of had all these ideas and the stuff I wanted to write about, and she just looks at me and she says, stop planning and just write. And I was like, okay. So I did. I just vomited, if you will, on the page. And I went from 15 minutes a day to an hour or two a day or a bunch of hours, and now I write. I mean, it's ridiculous. 4, 5, 6, 7 hours every single day, all day. That's what I do. I mean, that's the thing. Like, people mistake when someone says, "Oh, what do?" People screw this up all the time because they mistake the three different elements. See, there's your occupation, there's your job, and there's what you do. Let me break down the distinction. So, your occupation is what occupies your time. So, I'm a writer because writing occupies most of that. That's my occupation as a writer. So, what do? But what you do is how you make a living. So what do? You know, I'm a resource. That's the way I think of myself, as a resource for my clients. And that's I deliver value to them in a lot of different ways. So who are you? Or, you know, back to that sort of thing of occupation is what occupies your time. Your job is sort of your the title. You know, and then what do? It's how you make a living. So all three of these things sort of come together. Occupation, your job, and what you do, and we need to know the distinction. So what I do is not a writer. My job is not a writer. My occupation is a writer.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So when did you, you know, since we're talking about kind of figuring out some things about what you want to do, when did you figure out some of this stuff? Like, you know, you said you didn't start out with a name tag to build a business. You started that. So, you know, when did you figure out, here's what I want to do and here's how I'm going to do it?
Yeah, I guess there was a few different sort of, I call them shove moments, when someone kind of shoves you like over the wall and says, no, you do this. This is it, man. This is what you got to do. And I had some professors kind of shove me. I had the first speech I ever gave to a Rotary Club at 7 in the morning to a bunch of old men, like terrified, freaked out. I'd just been on CNN like a week before, and then they called me for the speech. And so this guy afterwards, after I gave a speech, he was like, do you have a job? And at the time, I was selling furniture full-time to underwrite the cost of the book and then doing, you know, writing books and doing that whole thing kind of whenever else I could. And he's like, you should quit. You need to be a speaker. I was like, oh, cool, right on. And when a 92-year-old retired surgeon tells you that, you listen. So there's those clues, whether it's from someone you know, a random sort of angel you meet, or a friend, or you just kind of listen to what the world is telling you, you start to realize, oh, yeah, okay, I got it, this is it. And you just have to listen, you got to be open to it, receptive, and just kind of say, all right, well, maybe I'll go down that road and go down this road and just keep doing it and let it evolve organically, as opposed to saying, okay, this is it, this is what I'm going to do.
Right, so you kind of figure it out, get an idea of what it is in the moment, but like you said, with the list, you know, you don't, you know, you revisit from time to time, and you don't stay chained to one
right.
thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff I used to do I never do, and I hope I never do again. But then there's stuff that I do now that I never thought I would do, and I hope I never stop doing.
Right, so you don't want to, like, lock yourself into a box, because, well, that's kind of the antithesis of tapping your creativity.
What? Exactly. You know, pardon the pun, no labels, no limits.
Right. I like that. Okay. Excellent. So now we've kind of got the background and stuff. Let's get into, you know, there are probably people listening that they just heard you say, I write 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a day. And you know, maybe they hung up already because they're like, all right, this is insane. I'm not going to do that. Because for some people who don't write, who haven't, you know, when I speak on creativity, I talk about how, you know, it's beaten out of us in school a lot of times and lies dormant.
Sure.
So first off, do you really write that much every day? And if so, like, how do you do it?
Okay. No, I'm lying to you. I write 20 minutes a day. Of course I do. Well, what you have to really do is expand your definition of writing, because that doesn't always mean putting words on paper, on a computer, in a notebook. Writing, to me, is taking what's in your head and getting it out into the world. And emails don't count. Email is not writing. I don't want to hear that crap from people. Blogging, that's writing. Tweeting, that's certainly writing. It's publishing it. To publish means to make something public. And that doesn't mean you have to publish everything, but what it means is that you have your thoughts and they need to be out of you. So me writing 7 hours a day, I mean, I kind of have my standard 5 a.m. to 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning every day, 4 or 5 hours, and that's my baseline non-negotiable. Unless for whatever reason I have something before 10, which I rarely do, because that's my time. That's my peak creative experience, and I need to tap into that, because I suck writing at night. I can write in the afternoon and stuff, but, man, when it's dark and cold and quiet, I am on fire. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of my approach, and hopefully I can get those other couple hours in there. But, again, it's like I started with 15 minutes a day, so people shouldn't be intimidated because, A, you can build up to it, and B, you don't need to write this much. It's sick. It's an obsession. No one needs to write this much. But again, I'm all about volume, and I figure if I'm not that smart, I could just have more volume, because it's not about being right. It's about being everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the definition of writing, I think everyone needs to think about it. Like maybe, now maybe you're a podcaster, okay? So if you're a podcaster, perhaps you like talking better than putting words on paper. Awesome. That's still writing. Okay, that's taking your thoughts and getting them down, because it's recorded and you can have it transcribed, or you can go back and pick out the nuggets and stuff. But if you'd rather talk into a recorder for an hour every morning, right on, that's writing. If you'd rather have a conversation with someone who really like lights you up and record that, that's writing. If you want to get note cards out and put stuff down, flip chart, that's all writing. All this stuff is. It's not a pen in your hand. It is the thoughts out of your head.
So as long as you are getting the stuff out of your head. So to someone who says, you know, well, my writing process is, I kind of think about it for a while. You know, think about what I want to write. Would that fit into your process?
No, because thinking is the enemy. Remember what my friend said? Stop planning and just write. We don't need to think. No. Think on paper. That's what I do. I think on paper all day. Now, I think it's important to have that sort of wandering time and just thinking just for no reason. You don't always have to write everything. But, yeah, man, it's like, well, you know, I'd rather like to think. Fine. Think on paper. Think on wax, you know, if you're recording it. But, yeah, I mean, don't let those thoughts just, like, float out into the air. Get that stuff down.
All right, well, I want to jump ahead for a minute. Something I was going to ask you about later, but I think this is probably a good time to ask, is that you're a creative entrepreneur, and I am as well. And, you know, but there might be people listening here who, you know, don't have their own businesses, or if they do, they're not in a creative type field. Like, you know, maybe like take like just works for a company. You know, is this still something they should be doing? You know, if so, why? Like, should they be creating volume and content?
No, they're screwed. I don't know, man. I mean, look, creating content and building of volumes and bodies of work, it's totally not for everybody. Maybe for you, writing is taking that half hour to journal every morning, or I don't know, just getting your thoughts, or if you're a songwriter, you'd rather write music, whatever. It's about expression. It's about getting it out of you. You know, our thoughts don't belong in their heads. They don't do us any good there. They do us out in the world so that way they can help people, or we can add new molecules because other people hear our thoughts and add something to it. That's, you know, that's where they belong. So, yeah, I mean, frankly, I'm a terrible business person. I don't care about business. I don't like being a business person. I could care less about how good my company is doing. And I don't care. I'm an artist. I'm a performer. I'm a writer. I'm a thinker. That's what I care about. And, I mean, I got to take care of my business, and I got to make sure I'm alive and I'm making money so I can support my lifestyle and underwrite my addictions. But yeah, who cares about business?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I had another question about that, but I'll save that for a little later. Well, then let's talk about, you talked about journaling in the morning. So I want to talk about this idea that I know at least when I spoke with you about a year ago, I know you were still doing called Morning Pages. And I want to know if you were still doing that, and if so, if you could kind of share with people what that is and, you know, why you find that beneficial.
So I this is from Julia Cameron from The Artist's Way. If you've never read The Artist's Way, even if you're not an artist, you got to do it. It is one of the great permission slips you'll ever read, because it really makes you read this thing, and it's like, wow, I want to do this. I want to create. I want to make stuff. So, you know, her work gives you permission, and part of it is the morning pages. So here's how it works. Or I should say, here's what I do, which is for the most part the way Julia Cameron suggests it. This is how I start every day of my life. After I wake up and shower and brush my teeth and, you know, get my headphones on and pick the right music for 5 in the morning, I open up a blank document, a Microsoft Word, and I vomit. So for 20 minutes, I just purge every thought, every impulse, every complaint, every frustration, what I dreamt of when I woke up 20 minutes ago. I just puke it onto the page. And anything goes. So there's no stopping or editing, or there's no audience. These are private. No one ever looks at this but me. I don't even keep most of them. There's no boundaries. So, and I'm not even thinking, okay? I'm just reacting. I'm just confronting myself. It's not a blank page. It's a mirror. And I just empty my heart onto 3 pages. That's it, 3 pages. And sometimes I get to 2 and I want to quit. I'm like, no, you got to get to that 3rd page. Even if it's only like 5 lines on page 3, that's okay. That's still, because it's that 3 pages where that's what it takes. I've done this with different retreats that I've hosted, and usually for the first 2 pages, you're just complaining and bitching and moaning and talking about what you did the day before and what you dreamt of and what you have to do later that day. You kind of run your to-do list. But it's only on that 3rd page when you dig deep. It's like the list of 101. So that 3rd page, that last 30%, that's when you really – you end up like writing something and you see it on the screen and you go, oh, my God, did I just – holy shit. And so it's very confrontational and it's very revealing. So that's what I do. Is at this point, I've been doing it so long, you can't even read it. I can't even read what I'm writing. It's illegible. It's gibberish. But I know what I'm writing as I'm saying it. And a lot of times, I'll think of stuff as I'm doing it, and I'll go back and fish it out of it and use it for something else. But most of the time, it's just trash. I just dump it, and I delete it. I never see them again. I may keep a few here and there because I might say something important. I might go back and look at them. But no, it's... vomiting is the gateway to the creative self, and it's this daily ritual. It's an emotional release, and it's that gateway to value. I'm a big fan of synonyms for vomit. I love vomiting synonyms. Here's a couple of my favorite ones: barf mulch, blow donuts, fertilize the sidewalk, impromptu listen to this one. Impromptu protein party. God, is that good?
Oh, my goodness.
I know, man. So, yeah, I'm 12 years old. Sue me. So that's what I do every morning. And what's neat is that just loosens the brain up. And it's like going to the golf course and hitting a bucket of balls before you go onto the course because you got to get the shanks out, right?
Yeah.
So that's what you do. So every morning I do that. And I started doing that, oh, God. 7-8 years ago, I don't know. And my writing has never been the same. I mean, you get to the good stuff. You got to clear away that crap first, and then you get to your best creative material. So read The Artist's Way, learn about it. Again, most people are never going to do it. Most people will never write 3 pages the minute they give up ever in their life, and that's okay. I'm just telling you what happens when you do.
Right, so to put this just in perspective also of this kind of whole program in terms of, you know, figuring out what you want and then making your plan to get it. Let's say there's a person listening right now they got a job, it's pretty good, but they're not fulfilled. What do you perceive will happen if they spend some time doing the morning pages?
They're going to give themselves permission to entertain, explore, and potentially agree with what they're thinking. See, that's one of the things that Morning Pages did for me is I was in a relationship years ago, and you're kind of at this point, you've been together with someone for 3 or 4 years, you're in love, this is it, you've committed. And so if one of those little thoughts, like, floats by, and it's that thought of, hey, have you really considered the fact that maybe this person you're dedicating your life to is a manipulative bitch who's just trying to ruin your life? And so, like, that's a thought you would never have because you don't allow yourself to have. That's the whole cognitive dissonance of, no, I've already committed, that couldn't possibly be true. No. I mean, it's fundamentalism at its worst and at its most dangerous. So when you do these morning pages, what happens is it's a safe container for you to share with yourself honestly and openly. No one's going to see it. It's just you on a blank page. It's a meditation. It's a prayer. It's a conversation with the divine because it's in you and you're just like putting it out there. So you do it and then you're like, oh my God, did I just write that? Oh my God. But then it's like, okay, I've acknowledged this thought. And then maybe a couple weeks later, you do it again. Maybe you explore it. Maybe you write out on a piece on the paper, like what you really think. And then maybe you're like, you know what? Wow. I never would have given myself permission to say, I hate this job. I only say that I like it so I don't feel bad for my boss. Maybe you say that and you're like, I'm so glad that I had this revelation. I realize I'm not happy and I can't be happy unless I get out of here and I'm doing a disservice to this organization by coming in here at 40%. That's the kind of stuff that happens, man. I swear to God, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but I got an email from this woman who tried this and spent some time doing it. And she wrote me an email, and like, I don't know, a week after she had seen me talk about this in a presentation, she's like, Scott, you're not going to believe it. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I've been doing the morning pages, and I presented this information to my company, and I just got fired.
Holy cow.
And I know. I was like, what? Are you serious? And I wrote her back. I'm like, oh, my God. You actually did what I said and you got fired? Oh, hell. Like, this is horrible. And she wrote back and she said, Scott, it was the best thing that ever could have happened to me. I didn't want to admit it, but I had to leave. And, you know, I didn't do anything. All I did was gave her permission to think for herself and really be honest about it. So I was like, oh, my God. Now, I'm probably not going to put that testimonial on my website. But it's like, I wonder what could
be good, but
I know. But it's like, I wonder what would happen. I wonder what would happen if people gave themselves permission to be honest.
Yeah, well, if I could share 2 real quick stories from my end.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of relations, I was dating a girl, and she was really unhappy with her job, but she didn't know what else she wanted to do. So I actually suggested that she do the morning pages every day. And she was really resisting me. When I asked her why, she literally said, because I am afraid of what I might write.
Sure.
And, you know, there is a certain courage that, you know, you have to have that willingness to expose yourself.
Even if it's only to yourself, I mean, that's you know, the scariest audience of all is the one that looks back at the mirror, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I told her. I said, you know, you're the only one's going to see this, but she was still just unwilling because she didn't want to face some of those thoughts that were holding her back and that were inside of her. And
amen.
On a positive example, I have a buddy who I think you met. His name was Mike, and he got a degree as an undergrad. Yeah, he's a great guy. He got his undergrad degree in music, but then he took a corporate job, and he was pretty dissatisfied. He'd been there for a long time, and he started doing morning pages. And he really credits this, because after about a month of doing it, he just decided, he walked up to me one day, he's like, yeah, I'm going to go back to grad school and get a degree in, you know, graduate degree in music. And, you know, it just became that clear to him that that's what he wanted to do from doing these morning pages. And sure enough, he did it. Now he's, like, working, he's got a video game company where he writes music and produces video games. It's, you know, it's all pretty cool. But all that came from that, like you said, I love your thing about how it's not a blank page. It's a mirror, and people are way, you know, too often way too reluctant to just look in the mirror to figure it out.
Amen. So give it a shot, right?
Okay. Well, this is a good moment to pause for station identification. So for people who joined us halfway through here, I'm talking with Scott Ginsburg, who is sharing us lots of great ideas about tapping your creativity, learning how to vomit your ideas and get them out of you. If you want to learn more about Scott and read his stuff, he's got like, what, 12 books now? Is that right?
Actually, it's a baker's dozen, Bab.
Baker's dozen, nice. So 13 books now, and just like hundreds and hundreds of blog posts. And or if you're interested in him as a speaker, he lets you rent his brain to help, you know, if you want specific ideas from him, all that stuff, type in name tag in Google and you will find Scott. And you can contact him, sign up for his stuff, buy his books, and hire him because he's fantastic. And
yeah.
If you're just listening to this live and you want to re-listen to this because there's some great ideas already and you want to make sure you don't miss anything, if you're listening to the free version, you can still sign up for the paid version at smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. And if you buy the paid version, you get the recordings, you get the transcriptions, you get a bunch of bonuses. So if you're just listening in for free, but you want to get this recording, go to smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. All right, Scott, one of the things you had said you want to talk about before, when we talked about this call before, was this idea of building a creative inventory. And I don't know if we already talked about that or if you want to talk more about it, exactly what that is and why that's important.
The baseline philosophy is if you don't write it down, it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole concept of writer's block, it really doesn't exist if you don't want it to. If we can find a way to not only write down but organize and categorize our ideas on whatever one we want, you know, I use my laptop, but there's a million ways to do it. If we can do that and if we know where they are, if we can access them, then it's really easy to stay organized. It's easy to not find inspiration but beguile it. You can look through a folder. You know, you wake up in the morning like, gosh, what am I going to write about? You just open that folder, and there's a bunch of prompts, a bunch of, you know, sentences. Benjamin Franklin had a name for this. He called it, in Italian, un linee d'ogne, which is like the one line, the one spark that sort of gets you going. And that's what you need, man. You know, you just, like here, I'll give you an example, okay? We've been talking now for, you know, 40 minutes, and I just wrote down, as we were talking, the scariest audience of all is when it's us. Okay, I wrote that down. That's one sentence. That's 8 words, and I saved it as a document. So every idea that you save should be saved, and the title of the document needs to be the idea, because that way you can search for it. And then what you do is just keep it in a folder. Maybe you have titles for something or quotations or one-liners or philosophies, whatever. Just save them all. Keep them organized. And then it's easy to find. And then you'll never not be inspired because it's just there waiting for you.
And, you know, this could apply, I would say, even to someone who doesn't make their living as a writer or creative type.
Sure.
Is, you know, let's say like an IT person, if you get a good idea, write
sure.
it down. Even if you don't know how you're going to use it, just write it down, stick it in a document or stick it as a title of a document so it's there for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's like collect, always, store... immediately, use eventually, delete never.
I like that.
Yeah.
Can you repeat that? Was that
sure.
Something you said before? Or did you just make that up?
No, I mean, that's kind of my approach to it. Okay, so collect everywhere, you know, store immediately, use eventually, delete never.
That's perfect.
You'll find a use for it. If you don't, that's okay. I mean, I have terrible ideas every day, and I save them. I have a folder called crappy ideas.
Well, that actually brings up a really good point is, you know, a lot of times when people come to trying to be creative, whether it's writing an article or a book or generating content or even just doing something like sitting down with a piece of paper trying to brainstorm ideas about
right.
what they want to do, you know, one time people get that quote-unquote writer's block is because every idea they have they think is terrible, so they don't want to get it on the page.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And there's a lot of different elements to that concept, so let me get into this. A, who are we to judge if an idea is terrible? The approach we need to take with every idea, and, you know, for that matter, people that we meet. I mean, this is about being a judgmental person, okay? Whether we're judging ideas, people, experiences, cultures, we need to learn how to treat things and people with deep democracy. Not to assign value, not to say this is good because it makes me feel this way or this is bad because it makes me, it's just, no. There's no, you got to take the emotion out of it, just get it down. And you evaluate it later. So that's the first thing is how do we know it's a bad idea? And why have we earned the right to categorize it as such? Secondly, if we don't have any bad ideas, we'll never get to the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody on this planet read my morning pages, they would never talk to me again. It is the most horrible, disgusting, perverted, sickening, depressing. I mean, if you read this, you would think, what is wrong with this guy? Nothing. I'm just being a human being, and I'm getting all that junk out of the way so the good stuff can come to the top. So bad ideas are the best thing that ever happened to you. And then lastly, bad ideas might be bad right now, but I've had bad ideas that I went back to. Like, I open up my crappy ideas folder a year or two later, 5 years later, and I look at it, and I go, you know what? That idea really was bad when I was 21, but wow, it sure is applicable now. Sure glad I saved it.
Right, I like that. And that's true, too. And also, time gives you also a new perspective. Maybe that
yeah.
idea 5 years later will trigger something in your head, like, oh.
Yeah.
So if you got – so that's actually a really good point. So if you got someone who's trying to, you know, figure out their life plan, quote-unquote, and his idea comes to them like, hey, you know, I want to be a ballet dancer. And they're just like, well, that's dumb. They should still write it down and, you know, put it in their file because 3 or 4 years later, maybe a circumstance has changed. When they look at it, they're like, oh, wow, now I actually have this opportunity or I could see how that could work for me now.
Hey, here's some perspective. People thought Christianity was a bad idea, but they still wrote it down.
Very true.
As a matter of fact, I just wrote that down as I said that. That was good.
I like that. That's sure, everything starts out like a bad idea, so it's just got to get it out and then build off of it. So, you know, one of the other things you had mentioned, you have this idea about crippling your creative productivity. And I don't know if that's a specific technique or just kind of a general practice you have, but, you know, how can people really improve their ability to let creative ideas flow?
I believe it is a process of elimination. I mean, there's no shortage of resources and books and people that will tell you how to get ideas and how to get the flow going. So I'm not going to spend any time on that. I've already talked about it a little bit, but there are more important things to think about. See, the reason people can't get that flow going is because they're too busy. And when I say they're too busy, I don't mean like they're taking care of their kids or, you know, running errands and stuff like that. I mean, people are too busy waiting for permission, waiting for perfection. They're too busy trying to get everything organized. They're too busy editing themselves. They're too busy reading Twitter feeds. I mean, people just make a list of 20 things that are a waste of time and then just stop doing them. I mean, that's the easiest thing I could tell you because it's not a lack of, like I said, it's not the idea, it's the idea. So if execution is a process of elimination, think about things you might be able to delete. And that way, you kind of work backwards and you sort of reverse engineer it. And when your desk is cleaner, when your schedule is trimmer, then creating is just easier.
Right. So I have a really, I call it a stupid question, but it's one I know that I have and other people will have. So, you know, I see there's two sides of the coin here when it comes to elimination. One is, first is people who just aren't aware of how much time they're wasting, you know, how much time I'm spending on Twitter, Facebook, watching TV, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, the second step is, once you're aware, like I personally, on many days, I still find it hard to turn those distractions off. As much as I intellectually know, well, if I just stop, you know, Twittering, Facebooking, surfing, reading my websites, I would greatly increase my creative productivity. You know, there's still that little voice, or as you know, Stephen Pressfield calls it, that resistance. Do you have any advice for people who know what they should be doing and yet they can't seem to get themselves to shut off the distractions gate?
No, I don't.
No?
Because there's nothing I can do about that. I mean, isn't that like the big dilemma of the human experience? We know what to do, but we just don't do it. I don't know. I don't understand. I do too, and there's no answer for that. I mean, I'm sure there's software you can buy that shuts down your computer. I'm sure Stephen Covey has some very helpful seven-step system that will help you remove distractions. And okay, here, think of it this way. Instead of answering the question, because I don't have one, let me just tell you a very quick story. So Laura Stack, who we both know and love, she did a time management seminar, okay? And that's her thing.
Yeah.
She's good. She's the best, man.
Well, I think you cut out there for a second. So I missed you after you said Laura Stack, who we all know and love.
Excuse me. So she did a time management seminar in St. Louis that I went to, okay?
Okay, got it.
It was 3 hours. So if you haven't already picked up on the irony, a three-hour time management seminar, okay? So
yeah.
just make – and I went to it. A, I went to her because she's my friend. B, I wanted to see her work because I like to watch my friends do what they do. And C, I was just like – I never been to a time management seminar. I'm like, I'm really curious. I want to experiment with this, okay? So I paid $60 for 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
and her seminar was fantastic. It was one of the best time management seminars that I've ever heard of. I've only been to one, but it was the coolest thing ever. And here's why: because instead of paying attention, I finished my next book. So
were you sitting there writing away while she was giving her seminar?
Yeah, so it worked, right? I mean,
yeah.
She's doing a seminar on time management, and so I listened to her. I managed my time by spending those 3 hours listening to myself, writing what needed to be written, and when it was done, I said, Laura, that was so worth my time. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's not a disrespect to her because she did a great job. She inspired me to manage my time, so I did.
Right. So it sounds like, to a degree, it's almost kind of doing whatever it takes. I mean, different people are going to have different strategies, right? And because I know you're a big proponent. I've seen your writing on commitment and discipline, which are, you know, two things you value to a great degree.
Yeah, commitment is part of my constitution as a human being. It's who I am. And yeah, I mean, everyone has an excuse for time management, and there's nothing I can do that is ever going to help someone manage their time ever. So if you go back to the first thing we talked about, remember the list, the three lists?
Yeah.
Here's what I've learned. I don't care how busy you are. I don't care how much stuff you have going on in your life. If you have 101 reasons why it's important to you, you'll do it.
Hmm.
The end.
So it kind of comes back to the beginning, which is figuring out who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Makes
a lot of this stuff happen.
It does. Like, knowing who you are makes decisions easier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing that down. That was good.
So, yeah, that's a lesson for everyone listening to this is, you know, because I remember one of the most visual memories I have of you, one of the first times I met you, is we was at a Speakers Association conference, and you were, you had this, like, moleskin notebook you carried around with you everywhere you went. And a bunch of times I remember standing next to you and someone would say something, you'd just pull it out, write it down, whether it was something they said or an idea that they gave you, like that something you popped in your head. But you were just writing, constantly taking notes and writing stuff down.
Correct. That's what I do. And it's also how I listen, and that's how I metabolize the world, and that's how I show respect to people that their words have weight. It's not just the writing part of it. But, yeah, I'm a ninja. I grew up watching ninja movies. The greatest. I think ninjas are some of the most important people in the world. And I learned about how ninjas work. See, ninjas work in a way that promotes invisibility. Ninjas are so fast and so quick and so ruthless that, like a ninja will decapitate you, and before you even realize that your head is about to fall off, the ninja will already be down the street sipping green tea, and your head's still on. It's like, you know, in the ninja movies when they decapitate you and there's like that split second where you're still like alive, but then the head like slides off the neck and
you don't even realize you're dead.
Yeah. So that's me. Like, when someone says something, I will document it so quickly, either internally or I'll physically write it down. I will get it so fast before anyone even realizes it. And sort of my metaphor is, I will turn a seed into a forest before the rest of the world realizes it's raining.
Wow, I like that metaphor. That's great. Something we all can learn from, which kind of brings me to the next section I want to talk about, and we are kind of coming close to the end of the hour here, but is really the application phase, because so far we've been talking about creating, writing, doing morning pages, doing these lists, which is all very, very important. But, you know, once you've got these ideas out, what do you do with them? You know, like, how do we apply our creativity?
I don't know.
That's kind of a broad question. I'm not sure if I was clear, but I know one thing we talked about before, you talk about execution, and, you know, right. There you said, you know, you will plant the seed and grow a forest while other people don't even know it's raining. You know, how important is the application piece when it comes to creativity?
It's the only thing that's important, because if it's just an idea, it doesn't do you any good. The question is, what do you turn it into? The question is, now that I have this, what else does this make possible? It's all about the leverage, and it's about the ability to look at an idea and to imagine what it could become. See, I don't plan. I don't have a map. I never know where I'm going. I get lost every day of my life. I rarely know how to do anything. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not like being flippant. Like when I wrote my first book, I didn't know how to write a book. Start a website, I don't know how to do that. Started doing interviews, I don't know how to do that. I never have known how to do anything. And I think that what happens is that we get stopped by not knowing how. And I know the people on this call right now, they took the time to listen and they paid their money to do it and they were hoping for a plan. I don't have one. I have no idea how people can do stuff. As you've heard today, talking about lists and about commitment, about constitution, I'm a why guy. I am all about why, and the reason is because I find that if we have a strong enough why, if we have a higher volume of why, then the how will come. We'll figure it out. We'll do it. I mean, at this point, if people are hearing all this stuff and they're like waiting for my, you know, seven-step system, like, I have nothing. I mean, my books are written as devotionals because, again, I'm Johnny Commitment. So if you read my books, it's not a plan. It's 366 days of one little thing every single day. And that's what it is. That's the consistency. That's the commitment. And it's those inches that build up. I do little stuff every single day, and it becomes big stuff, hopefully. If not, it's fine too. But, yeah, man, that's my plan. Like, I remember I wrote a blog post a couple of years ago that nobody, like, three people got it. But everyone was like, well, I don't understand. What is this? This makes no sense. This is stupid. And the title of the blog post was The Most Important Word in Creativity. And I imagine you can go find it somewhere. I don't know where it is. But, yeah, the title of the blog post was The Most Important Word in Creativity. And then the entire blog post, I wrote the word every day, and I just cut and pasted like 200 times. I know I was I was trying to be clever, and I don't think it worked very well. But it was like, yeah, just every day, every day, every day, and that's it. That was it. And then at the end, it said, any questions? And then I get all these emails. It's like, wait, I don't understand. So what's the plan? What do I do? I'm like, oh, you did not, sir, you didn't get it. Every day. I'm like, just get a piece of poster board and write the word every day on it and just hang it on the wall. And there it is. Like, Other than that, I got nothing.
Well, it's funny, right? As you know, my background is in improv comedy. And, you know, one thing you learn there is two things. Number one, you obviously can't have a plan. The people who fail miserably at improv are the ones who begin an improvised scene with a plan in mind as to where the scene
right.
will go.
Right.
They always suck, and they are hard to work with. But the other thing you learn in improv is that you just take a step. Like, you do the first sentence in a scene, or you take the first line of a story without necessarily knowing where the rest of it's going to go. But
right.
each line and each step opens the door to the next one. And the best improvisers are the ones who take that first step or say that first line, trusting their creative process that, you know, my creativity is going to give me the next line as I progress. And
yeah,
it sounds like you're kind of saying something similar in terms of, your lack of planning.
The only thing harder than trusting the process is trusting yourself, but they both pay off.
Yeah, that's a great line, absolutely. So I appreciate the fact you don't have a plan. In fact, you know, one thing that frustrates me is that, I think using someone else's plan can work if you happen to have already
yeah.
the matching psychology, work habits, background, strengths, and weaknesses. Then someone else's plan will work for you. But that's why there's so many different, like, diets out there. Because everyone finds a diet without really thinking about what's going to work for me. They just follow someone else's plan, then they die off. So I think,
right.
as annoyed as people may be that you're not giving a step-by-step system, in the long run, you're giving them the best system, which is to use this process to figure out what's going to work for themselves the best.
Yeah, in the words of Jack Nicholson, don't you be like me.
I like it. So let me kind of... We're coming to a close here, but let's say someone's maybe I'm just looking for a little motivation here, but let's just say that you've been doing some of this stuff and you've got these ideas forming and now you're thinking like, yeah, I'm getting this inkling that this is what I want to do. There's two questions I have. I want to get opinion on these. Number one is, big goals versus small goals. Sometimes people are taught to dream as big as you possibly can, and then sometimes we're told to be realistic, and I was wondering where you fall on that spectrum.
Yeah, I try to do both. I think it's important. I think, like, it's important to, dream big, to, like, expand our mind and to remind ourselves what it was like when we were 12 years old. And, yeah, I mean, like, do you know who Mitch Matthews is?
I don't know.
He's a cool guy. He'd be a good guy to get on the seminar. He does, it's called the Big Dream Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially just has you write down, like, the biggest possible dream ever. And, you write it on a piece of paper and you put it on the wall, and then everybody else, like, adds to it. And says, oh, call this guy, do this, go here. And you're like, oh, cool. So it's neat. And so, yeah, I mean, he's all about the big stuff like that. So I met him last week at the Big Dream Gathering. And I wrote down, like, the biggest one I possibly had. I said, I want a one-man show on Broadway.
Uh-huh. Nice.
That's what I want. Whatever, professionally, at least, that's what I want. That's the biggest thing I can say. And I'm sure there's bigger things I can think of, but, like, right now I'm like, dude, that's huge. That's bigger than I ever dreamed, and you have to give yourself permission. At the same time, you also got to have those micro dreams, that vision board stuff, the stuff that you, not physically stuff, but the things that, like, you want to have and do and be. And, yeah, man, I mean, do them both. But I also think that there's, like, this misconception that, you share your dreams and then tell the world what all your dreams are, and, kind of the alchemist, people will conspire, the universe conspire on your behalf to help you get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I fully agree with that. I believe in sharing your dreams. I believe in telling them. I also believe in making sure you have the right audience. Because if you watch the Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith, there's a great scene when he's talking to his kid, his actual kid, who's also the character in the movie, and he says, you have to protect your dream. There are people that don't like when you dream. There are people that want to steal it from you. There are people who want to shoot it down. There are people who are jealous because they don't have the balls to dream themselves. You need to protect your dream from these vultures, because their purpose, whether or not they realize it, is to kick it out of you. So write your dreams down. Make them as big as you possibly can. Have fun with it. Be ridiculous and make them the whatever, the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal. But also do those little ones, like my dream is to get 5 new clients by the end of the week. Fine. Do them both. Write them down. Share them with the people who matter. And protect the hell out of them, because if we don't have the dreams, I don't know what else we have.
Great. And so one more question on a similar topic before I kind of move into the wrap-up here in summary. You know, sometimes we're taught, or I believe this, and it took me a while to figure this out, and I don't know where you fall on this, where your opinion is on this, but that we're supposed to find one thing, you know, that, like, I mean, in a very strict form, it's like, well, you go to school, so you can get a degree in a certain field, and you can work in that field, so you find your one thing. Some people, when they do this process, find that one thing. Some people, however, feel pulled in 2 directions or 3 directions or 5 directions, like, I really want to do this, but I also really want to do this, but I also really want to do this. If someone comes to you with that feeling, what is your advice to them? Do you think it's really critical to focus on one thing, or do you think it's empowering to focus on multiple things?
Steve Jobs, God rest his soul, taught us a lot about focus, and I think focus is a freedom device. Focus is the smartest thing we can do. We gotta pick a lane, man. But at the same time, though, when you're in Atlanta and you're on that 14-lane highway and there's traffic at like 8 p.m. on a Tuesday night and you want to like kill yourself, you know, you gotta pick a lane. But that doesn't mean you got to stay there forever. I mean, it's like you pick a lane, and then it's like, oh no, like there's 100 cars over here, but that other one's got nothing. I'm going to switch lanes, and then you get over there, and then all the cars build up. It's like office space. So
yeah.
Like I think we should pick a lane. I think we should focus, especially in the beginning. Focus is the best thing we could do. But I also think, like we talked about earlier, no labels, no limits. You know, I've been wearing a name tag now for 4,000 years, and 4,000 years.
4,000 days.
I know. God, that'd be a long-ass time, man.
Or that marketing propaganda we hear about.
Yeah. So wearing a name tag has kicked open a lot of professional doors. Writing, publishing, speaking, performing, hosting, teaching, leading, volunteering, traveling, branding, consulting. All of that stuff came from a sticker. And over the years now, the more roles that I started to undertake, you know, kind of the more plates that I started to spin, it started to become a lot more clear. As human beings, we are not supposed to be one thing in life. I think it was Emerson or one of them smart guys said, we need to make use of everything that we are. And I fully believe that. I practice that. Forget about belief. I practice that. We're not supposed to be one thing. We have to listen to what the world is telling us. We have to diversify our identity and open ourselves to becoming something more. I got an email, I'll never forget, years ago. This guy said, "Dear Scott, you know, love the name tag thing. I hope you keep it up. Just remember, what identifies you doesn't define you." So one of the goals of every creative professional is, we got to learn to live larger than our labels.
Well, that's a great line. Live larger than our labels. Yeah, that is great. And one thing I find as a creative professional is, like you said, kind of focus. You know, I'm realizing my focus needs to be on creating, like you said. And now for me, that could be writing blog posts. It could be writing speeches. It could be writing books. It could also be writing fiction. It could be writing or creating stand-up jokes. So for me, it feels like it's all from the same place. So my focus is on creating. The application where it goes tends to lead to some different places, though.
Yeah, it's like where it goes, nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, in just a second here, Scott, I'm going to ask you for any final thoughts beforehand. Let me thank you very much for the terrific content you've given us. This is a perfect way to have started this series off when I came up with this idea and this topic. You were the first person I thought of, so thank you very much for agreeing to do this and sharing your knowledge and information. For people listening, we're here with Scott Ginsberg. Type in name tag in Google, and you will get, I'm assuming, multiple results will come up, all pointing you to Scott. Scott is a writer, an author, a speaker, a consultant, just pretty much a brilliant guy. You can rent his brain. You can buy his books. You can hire him as a speaker. And if nothing else, type in name tag, go to his blog, and just read the incredible content he puts up there every single day to keep the learning going for yourself. For people who are on the paid version, you'll get the recording of this probably in about a day or two sent to you, or you got a link to it. For people on the free version who you know you want to listen again to this content and get the transcription, you can sign up for the paid version. Just go to smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. Join the paid group. You'll get the recording and the transcriptions and the bonuses. So thank you once again. Scott, how about sharing any final thoughts you have on our wonderful topic here of creativity?
One word, jump.
I like it. That's all you need to say. Thank you again, Scott. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next week when we have Bill O'Hanlon talking about how to get what you want and get out of your way psychologically and prepare yourself for success. So thank you, Scott. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next week.